What I'm hoping to try and do today is to give you some idea of some of the less restrictive alternatives available when they're appropriate. The new concept of supports and services, which you have probably heard 150 times already today, and how they are to be considered in the guardianship process. I got a call from a very good guardianship litigator recently, and I don't have slides about this, but she said, I need some way to wrap my mind around this where, the couple does their estate planning, and one of them either dies or, is in a memory care unit, and then family members move in on the other one and start revamping things. And she said, how do we not always end up with the guardianship in that second estate? Because we talk about less restrictive alternatives and supports and services. And I said, I don't know. I think you're right. I think that, the law is that you don't have a guardianship if you don't need a guardianship. But unfortunately, so much of the machinery, it just lurches forward to a guardianship. So as we go through talking about this, the subtext of all this is that you don't really have to have a guardianship if there's been planning done. And if you're the one defending the estate plan that someone else is trying to subvert, try and keep the estate plan in place and don't just go with the guardianship. Okay, end of sermon. Two concepts, less restrictive alternative supports and services. If one is available, one's appropriate. We're going to talk about one case where a judge thought, this has got to be right. There's always got to be something else we can do. And that judge refused to grant guardianships time after time after time after time. Well, that's not always right either. So in your materials is a list of less restrictive alternatives. With the recent advent of the three-ring circus in Austin, I added to that list because they have come up with some additional things, and I will reference those. But what we need to be thinking about is that we're crafting a solution. You need to be aware of all these other things so that you don't go ahead and do whatever you're going to do, and then you go, I wish I'd thought about that. Some of the alternatives are to the establishment of any guardianship that will prevent or delay opening a guardianship. Others serve to limit the effect of the guardianship. The following list is designed to provoke thought and is illustrative, but not exhaustive. When I first made a list of less restrictive alternatives in 1994, I came up with 14 things, and I thought I'd pretty much exhausted it, and we're up around 55 or so now. An emergency protective order under the Human Resources Code allows APS, after finding a probable cause at a hearing on a verified petition with an attorney ad litem, all the safeguards you can think of, to remove a person from a situation posing an immediate threat to their life or safety, and they can be examined and treated within 72 hours, and the removal can't last more than 72 hours unless extended by a court. Usually this is followed by an application for guardianship, but this is when it's truly on fire and burning. Surrogate decision making, is for non-emergency medical decisions without the necessity of guardianship for incapacitated individuals in a hospital, nursing home, or receiving home health, hospice, or personal assistance. It's a substituted judgment. It's not just a best interest, which is guardianship standard, but a substituted judgment. This is also available for the intellectually disabled, usually with some kind of team that is working together under the statute. It is available if a parent is unavailable, either under Chapter 34A, now there is a separate procedure for mental health, application for mental health services for a minor where a parent is unavailable. That's the 34 you know, it's like a superpower of attorney under the family code, has virtually eliminated guardianships of minors if a parent is available. Supported decision-making agreements, something that's still relatively new and is applicable in fairly limited circumstances, but you know, if you know someone who has done one of these, go to school on it, because it's very, very good for that, you know, just narrow sliver of situations. Emergency medical treatment. Well, emergency medical treatment implies consent. So this is when it is an emergency. But, you know, it's astonishing how often you have to educate medical personnel, whether it's at the business office of the hospital or the doctor's office, that no, you don't have to wait for consent. You don't have to get a court order.